And now we have one of the most popular broadcasters in the United States of America, Tom Joyner, a talk show host that's been at it for many, many years, one of the pioneers. And Tom Joyner, it's always good to have you come in and speak truth to us and tell us what's going on in this great nation of ours. So may I present you as one of the best, Tom Joyner.
Well, once again, we see the inaction of Barack Obama and Loretta Lynch, his new attorney general, as news of a senseless killing of a white policeman by an armed black man on the streets of Memphis, Tennessee, brings us full focus on the differences between white-on-black crime and black-on-white crime by those sworn to protect and defend us. Crime in Memphis is something overlooked because of crime in Chicago and Detroit and D.C. and other cities with large urban populations, but it dominates the news when it is happening in Chicago, but Memphis, well, not all that important. Yet Memphis is one of the most dangerous cities in America. This weekend, Officer Sean Bolton was doing his job. He made a traffic stop for a Mercedes that was parked illegally. Note that I said a Mercedes, not a common vehicle for the poor. Officer Bolton was just 33 years old. He was an Iraq veteran. He left behind a wife and children. As the officer approached the Mercedes, Tremaine Wilborn, 29, shot him several times, according to police. The officer died at the hospital. Wilborn was not a Boy Scout. In fact, he was only on that street because he had just completed a federal sentence for bank robbery. Wilborn was out on a supervised release program when he shot the officer. Apparently, Wilborn was selling drugs when he encountered Officer Bolton. Barack Obama just pardoned almost 50 drug dealers and called what drug pushers do a non-violent crime. He should explain that idiocy to the officer's widow and fatherless children. He won't explain it to them, because he has ignored them. No phone call of sympathy, no email, no mail, just silence. Now, contrast that to what Obama has said and done when the shooter is white and the victim is black. He rushes to the TV cameras to denounce it and even suggests that if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder simply whistled past the carnage when it was a white victim, black shooter. Loretta Lynch follows Holder's path, just as Obama appointed her to do. No outrage, no grandstanding for political advantage, just silence. Obama's actions and words have emboldened young black men who now feel free to reap mayhem upon the white people, just as they have forced that mayhem on innocent black people in our urban cities. The hate that Obama and Holder fostered between blacks and whites will cause more and more of these mindless shootings until an adult occupies the White House and demands equal treatment against all who kill. That adult does not necessarily have to have a white skin, but they cannot have a black heart, as we see in Obama today. Say a prayer for the officer, Sean Bolton, for his soul, for his family. But don't expect Barack Obama or Loretta Lynch to say, Amen. The Internet's filled today with visuals showing young black people attacking white victims. History shows that of the 770,000 violent interracial crimes, 85% are blacks on whites. Contrast that to 15% of white-on-black violence. Those incidents of several young blacks ganging up on one or two white people, including women, are increasing rapidly. Knocking the victim to the ground, they surround them, begin kicking them in the head and body, beating them with blunt objects, and spewing racial hatred. Yet we're told that's not a hate crime. While the mainstream media is quick to jump on any singular incident of white-on-black violence, especially if a policeman is involved, they simply refuse to acknowledge that hate speech and hate crimes are rapidly increasing among young black men, occasionally young black women. They choose to highlight the 15% of white-on-black crime, yet ignore or downplay the 85% of black-on-white violence. Now, why are we seeing this increase of hate from young blacks against white people? Attacked simply because their skin is white. This is the true legacy that Obama leaves behind. Obama, along with Eric Holder, the most racist attorney general in American history, chose to turn a deaf ear to incidents of black-on-white crime. Young black thugs came to understand that the Obama Justice Department under Holder was not going to hold them to the same responsibilities they imposed on white-on-black violence. Despite repeatedly filmed evidence of these young black mobs practicing hate and spouting hate, the Justice Department refused to bring justice to bear upon them. While Obama and Holder joined with Jackson, Farrakhan, and Sharpton in jumping to conclusions in the 15% of incidents of possible white-on-black violence, they consistently failed to speak out or prosecute the 85% of violence of blacks against whites. Meanwhile, the practice of slavery thrives in Muslim countries, and most of those African countries, even today. The Obama administration diverts the attention of the black community from this atrocity by trying to roll back history from 200 years ago to refocus it on white people today who never owned a slave, never had an ancestor who owned slaves. Now, it's easy to attack the history of those who fought on the southern side of the Civil War, to demand that soldiers be dug up from their graves of more than 100 years, monuments be brought down. But with Obama's blessings, there would only be a handful, if any, of people who have no skeletons in their closet if we look far enough back. No guilt for actions taken by their ancestors. That encompasses blacks as well as whites, Asians as well as Latinos, as well as Native Americans. No civilization in history has been free of actions that, in retrospect, contain no shame. Do we dig up Sitting Bull and Geronimo because they raided other tribes, took slaves, and killed others? Do we dig up black figures whose ancestors captured other blacks and sold them into slavery, killing those that the slavers would not buy? Do we dig up Asian leaders of the past who committed atrocities against their fellow man? Attila the Hun comes to my mind. Do we dig up Santa Anna because of his slaying of captives after his attack on the Alamo? How ignorant it is to ignore your own foibles and your pursuit against others. This is the end result of Obama's real legacy. A country so divided that any end justifies the means. Maryland politician Martin O'Malley, who's running for president on the Democrat side, recently spoke to a group composed of a majority of black Americans. O'Malley said that all lives matter, and he was booed by the crowd. How'd he handle it? He apologized for saying that all lives matter. That is the heart of the Democrat Party today. Appeasement, apologies, bowing and scraping, much like the actions of black Americans of decades ago who were terrorized by the Democrat-formed Ku Klux Klan and learned to bow and scrape before these robed racists in order to save their lives. History repeats itself. Barack Obama will go down in history as a very confused bigot who sees only the worst in white people and paints us all with the same broad brush. His real legacy will haunt America for decades after he leaves office. Last year, Our inept government paid out $60 billion to Medicare scammers who used empty lots and post office boxes to file fraudulent claims. $60 billion. $600 billion went missing when Hillary Clinton left the State Department. Still missing. The Pentagon routinely loses hundreds of billions of dollars every year. Unaccounted for billions are lost each year through waste and fraud. Meanwhile, we're told we need to pony up more taxes for the hungry kids in America. How many of these hungry kids could be fed with the hundreds of billions of dollars in government fraud and waste? Why do we continue to tolerate those who pump out these children like an assembly line in an auto factory and leave them without parental guidance for stressed taxpayers to provide for? There is no way this country can afford to allow that behavior to continue. It's past time for our Washington representatives to forget about votes from the community of deadbeats, black or white, and stop the insanity. The American taxpayers of all races, creeds, and colors are under duress. Many have trouble feeding their own families, and they can ill afford to keep up the mad lifestyles of the irresponsibles. The baby makers, black and white, must be confronted for their assault against taxpayers. If we do not curtail this senseless assault against innocent children, we have to demand that anyone on welfare be prevented from using benefits to purchase marijuana, hard drugs, booze, vacation trips, strip club extravagances. Working Americans are subjected to drug tests before being hired. Those on welfare should have to pass those tests as well. How ignorant is it to ask working people to pass a drug test to get a job, and yet not require a drug test for those who gladly take their benefits from those working Americans? Now, let me remind you that the poll numbers Donald Trump is enjoying will be fleeting. I'm not attacking Donald Trump. I'm just telling you the way life is, reality. Now, I respect the man for speaking up about things that we all feel, but the Donald's freewheeling style will not land him in the White House. You're free to disagree, and we'll see who's right as we go along. Trump does, however, show the frustration that many Americans feel. Politicians of both parties endorse the idea of seniority, and that has led to a government owned by corporate interests. Now, I'm not sure that most Americans truly understand how much lobbyists affect our country's future. Billions of dollars walk the halls of Congress every day, looking for the pockets of those willing to sell out their constituents for the benefit of bankers, huge corporations, and well-funded advocacy groups. Now, I once owned an apartment for several years at 21st and N Streets in Washington. I frequented restaurants on K Street where lobbyists converge nightly to treat politicians to elaborate dinners and free booze. Democrats and Republicans drink expensive wines and dine on prime rib, courtesy of corporate lobbyists who are funded by their clients. It's a disgusting display. At one point, I spoke to House Speaker Tip O'Neill and asked him how many poor people could benefit from the enormous prime rib awaiting his fork and the expensive wine in his glass. He was at the next table, but he didn't carry on the conversation. You have no well-financed lobbyist working for you, just as I'm not represented in their number. The waitress in the diner has no lobbyist. The plumber, beaded with sweat as he works on your commode, has no lobbyist. But large banks and corporations have lobbyists all over Capitol Hill, and far too many of the politicians there are happy to sell out their constituents in favor of the lobbyists. It's all about the money. It's nigh impossible to serve in Congress for extended terms and not fall prey to the intoxication of the lobbyists loaded with cash. That's why our forefathers set the stage for politicians to go to Washington for a limited time and vacate the office before corruption sets in. Some 50-plus years ago, politicians realized they could stay in power for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, or more, with the help of friendly lobbyists. That's when the two-party system, which in reality is not true opposition at all, began to slide into depravity and fraud. Both parties found that the more they promised to give to voters, the longer they could stay in office and enjoy the myriad of benefits that they vote for themselves. They realized they could place laws upon the rest of us and exempt themselves and their friends from having to follow those same laws. Now, I can remember asking myself, why would a person spend millions of dollars to get a political office paying less than $200,000 a year? The answer is that the salary is a small part of compensation that members of Congress receive. With just a few years in the House and Senate, they'll receive benefits and salary for the rest of their lives. Lobbyists concentrate on senior congressional aides. They wine and dine them, hold out hope that when the aide decides to leave a congressperson's office, that aide just might be given a swanky office, large salary, and benefits in the office of the lobbyist. So where do you think the loyalty of these aides lies? With you and me, or with the lobbyist? In many cases, your congressperson, House or Senate, never reads the bills that come to their desk. They depend upon aides to break it down into talking points. That hope is slim that they would not be biased. Politicians in office today and over the years have woven a safe cocoon around themselves. They have made it almost impossible to vote them out. Flush with money from lobbyists, they put rules in place to protect themselves, and they buckle down for a stay of 30 years or more. Of course, these lobbyists, these corporate contributors, the windfalls don't come without a price. And many, if not most, office holders on Capitol Hill succumb to the temptation of that easy money, travel, and illicit companionship. Now, I've been very hard on the Democrat Party over the years because of its reversal from persecuting blacks to the time 50 years ago when the party saw that buying the votes of black Americans with taxpayer money was much easier than keeping them subdued through groups like the Klan. They dropped the Klan robes and put on a Santa Claus suit, blindly voting in more and more social programs and giveaways. The black community, which had been steadily pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, collapsed. The lure of being able to depend upon government for not only what you need, but what you want, and are clearly not entitled to be given with other people's money, proved too great. Leadership of the Democrat Party fell into the hands of people like Barack Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Maxine Waters, Elijah Cummings, Charlie Rangel, and a host of ne'er-do-wells drunk on power, greed, and corruption. The most ignorant statements from these people were overlooked by a mainstream media filled with idealistic liberals like Dianne Feinstein of California, who recently said that all veterans have mental problems and should not be allowed to have a gun. So much for any patriot who might want to reenlist to fight for our freedom. They'd have to serve in Iraq without a gun. Can't we see how ignorant liberalism can be? Now, having said all of this, let me turn to the fact that today there is less distance between Democrats and Republicans in Washington than the space in the eye of a needle. Ted Cruz leaped to the top of my list when he had the courage to stand on the Senate floor, feet from Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's seat, to call the Republican Senate leader out on blatant lies that he told his own party members. That caused them to vote for a bill they would not have voted for if McConnell had truthfully told them that he had made a deal to back the import-export bank legislation. The sad truth is that politics today doesn't just make strange bedfellows. They lead to incest. The American people elected a Republican majority in the House and the Senate. Evil, dishonest Harry Reid and a clueless Nancy Pelosi lost their leadership positions. now we could finally clean up Washington, right? Heavens no. These Republicans settled in to the posh atmosphere of Washington's power people, and they continue on with the same old, same old. The two parties cover for each other, so that if and when bad news gets out on any one of them, they can expect cover from the other party. Elijah Cummings, among others, is up to his eyebrows in the IRS scandal, where he leaned on the IRS to go after conservatives, and where he was given sensitive tax information on other people in violation of the law. Lois Lerner, of course, took the Fifth Amendment to cover herself, and Cummings has continued to try and kill any investigation into his and the IRS's wrongdoings. He's also fighting to block the truth regarding Hillary Clinton's email destruction. Which Republican, then, is keeping the heat on Cummings? Or Lerner, for that matter? Nobody. So I want my conservative friends in the Democrat Party, and there are many, to understand that I realize that it's not only Democrats that we have to keep under the microscope. Silver-tongued Republicans need to be watched as well. And this brings us back to the candidacy of Donald Trump. The Donald is a combative person by nature, and that leads him to launch attacks against anybody who says anything negative about him. I can understand his feelings, but a president has to control his or her emotions better than Donald Trump controls his. Voters are going to tire of the constant turmoil. But in the meantime, Trump is serving a good purpose, and that is to call out the backroom, chummy nature of Democrats and Republicans, force them to recognize that what Trump is saying echoes what average Americans are feeling. Corrupt politics and politicians have taken voters for granted for decades, basically thumbing their nose in our faces after each election cycle is over. They felt that we really had no choice but to continue on with business as usual. Trump voices that frustration, and that's healthy. Those in office need to understand that this is a new day. And as a famous movie newscaster once said, we are mad as hell and we are not going to take it anymore. Now, if there are differences between Mitch McConnell and John Boehner on the Republican side and the minority leaders of the Democrat side, it's hard to see. Last Friday, Cruz blew the lid off of backdoor politics in an incredible show of courage. There has been an unwritten rule in the Senate that all members must not speak ill of their fellow senators. The seniority system assures that any of the younger members who speak their mind will be punished, denied advancement, and shunned by the older crew who relish the status quo. It took a lot of courage for Cruz to stand up in front of the man he was accusing, the majority leader with all of the power of that position, and challenge that status quo. Predictably, the entrenched Republicans rose up against Cruz to denounce him and call for that coveted silence about party members that they have nurtured and cherished. What hypocrites these Republicans are. Remember when the South Carolina congressman shouted, "You lie," at Barack Obama's State of the Union speech? Other members, Republican and Democrat, gasp and wrung their hands at the idea of another member challenging a lying man for lying. We now know that Obama was indeed lying and that he would go on to become the most untrustworthy president in history. Why would members of the Senate not want us to know of Obama's lying nature? Because their own house of glass is filled with their own lies and backdoor deals. So they cover for each other, unless or until something like Bill Clinton's blue dress nightmare makes it impossible to deny. They then will turn on that member with gusto. They'll express surprise. But how many of you believe that Bill Clinton's cavalier treatment of women was not known by each member of the House and Senate? I first became aware of it back when Clinton was Arkansas's Attorney General. It was only after I began to talk with the press and politicians of both parties and told them what I knew, what was being kept secret, that they began to open up and talk about it. Still, they refused to speak on the record or confront a fellow politician. We can only hope that once Trump gets his fill of the publicity that will lead to his now being heard on the political stage, that he puts his money and support behind a more even-tempered Republican. In the meantime, Trump has brought truth front and center, and he has Democrats and Republicans trembling in their boots. That's a good thing, but not something that can last. What is said is important, but how it is said determines its value. Finally today, some of you may have seen or heard of the following, but I'll repeat it because it clearly shows why our welfare rolls are ballooning. Why would somebody work for a living when their state and federal government gives them more money each year than they can make on a job? Welfare in more than 13 states already pays more than $15 an hour. Welfare benefits have increased faster than the minimum wage. Hawaii is the biggest offender, doling out $60,590 a year to the welfare recipient. The District of Columbia gives out $50,820 a year. Massachusetts, $50,540 a year. Connecticut, $44,370 a year. In fact, you have to go all the way down to North Carolina, number 27 on the list at $25,760 a year, before you begin to reach a figure that most on welfare could possibly make, given their education and skill levels. The average middle class annual income today is around $50,000, down from $54,000 at the beginning of the Great Recession. California pays out $18.50 an hour to welfare recipients. Meanwhile, the average teacher earns $40,065 a year for actual work. America is virtually bankrupt, and it's not hard to see why. Carl?
Well, Tom, you gave us a lot to think about, a lot to meditate upon, and you do a lot of research. I commend you for that. And I'm just overwhelmed. I don't know how we're going to get out of this situation because nobody will tell us the truth. The mainstream media will not tell us the truth. They will give us information that is not relevant. And when they put more emphasis on maybe on an elephant being killed than they do innocent babies, we're going down the wrong highway.
We've been going down that highway, Carl, and I've said this before, but I am just totally ashamed of the profession that I chose. I never was ashamed of it before until the last few years. But we see a medium now, a media that is chock full of people with very little conscience, extreme liberal beliefs, and don't question why they must tell the American people the truth. It's not always just a blatant lie. It's misleading you to think something is true that isn't. It's a sad thing, but I've said before, Carl, all is not totally hopeless, all is not totally lost. But it is time for Americans to start to speak out and understand that you do count. What can I do, you say? You can get on the program, talk to your representatives, let them know what you're going to do and not do, and let them know that your vote and every vote that you are able to influence is going to go against them in the next election if they do not put their true attention to the problems we're facing.
Well, I would say that about 95% of all of our politicians are more interested in courting the big money than they are doing what's right for the people back home. Thank you for a great commentary, Tom Joyner, and I know you'll be back again real soon.
Thank you, Carl. Let me say quickly, my brother-in-law, Joe Tart, is in the hospital in Chapel Hill. It's a serious situation, not hopeless yet, but a very serious situation. And so Joe was a druggist for about 40 years. So if you would offer a prayer tonight for Joe Tart, I believe in prayer, and I'd appreciate it. And, Carl, God bless America.